Good afternoon, Connecticut. How are you doing? Man, it's been a minute. We've been busy. We've been busy. This legislative session, this has been something. I mean, there's so much need out there, but where do you start? Like, what do you start with? Whose need should go first? Well, that's one part of it. But then there's also representation, right? We have a real problem here. The politics is just as much a thing as in the past. CJ here, and this is the son of Black and Brown, and I see three-fifths made it in. What's up, three-fifths? How are you doing?
Sister, for you.
I was just saying, we've been busy because we've been handling some stuff, the legislative stuff and things like that. But also to, I'm gonna start it off with you. You want to tell us what's been going on locally with the politics, as they say? What's been on your mind? What's looking concerning?
I got a chance to study this early voting, and I think early voting is one of the biggest mistakes that you make that they made. Because the problem with early voting, they don't realize is,
Really?
yeah, I'll tell you why. Once you put that ballot,
Mm-hmm.
what if the person changes? I can see early voting maybe two or 3 weeks before the actual election.
I see what you mean. So you're saying like the time frame. But then let's take it a step further, right? Because you've also been in the game long enough to know that when this thing with the early voting started, the parameters of it changed, didn't it? Because what I find interesting, for the longest time, we've been talking about terms, the terms that the mayor serves versus the state rep versus everybody else. And at one point, before recently, the mayor had the shortest term, correct? So now the mayor has the longer term of 4 years, plus the early voting, plus what you're saying. That's big. Because why should people care about the party affiliation? Because people could do that, can't they? If I'm, under what, the Democratic Party, but then like a month before I decide to switch, does this stop that? Do you know?
Well,
You know what I'm
like you
trying to
said,
say?
with
Like,
early voting, once you cast it, that's it.
that's it, right?
Can't take
So
it back.
I can't take it back. So if you're running for office and you go from one to the other, my vote follows you, right? So wouldn't that mean then it's like a bad game of tag that everybody could just do what they want at the last minute? Where's the line in the sand? Is there any?
But see, again,
You know?
those that control, that make the rules up, they make the rules up.
Mm.
I mean, look at the charter for New
Oh, you're
Hampshire.
seeing some heavy stuff.
The charter.
Oh, Lord, find him.
What they should have did was they should do like some states where you have 4 terms, but there's term limits. So you can even only have
Right. Exactly. You
and
can't
that's it.
like
And by the
overlap,
way, and there's
right?
no term limits. Right, you can't. But they didn't do that. But again, look at the charter. The same people that,
It's the same, but this is the thing, it's the crossing over that's dangerous too, right? Because
Yes, it
there's
is.
enough people that you could actually do this in a way. I mean, there's enough people out here who could pull these offices. The problem is that they make you think they groom you into selecting the same people over and over. And what the public needs to do a better job of is not falling for that. Now, I myself, I'm unaffiliated for a reason because,
So am I.
I mean, I look at the Dems, right? What's your reason? Because I'm just looking at what's going on and I'm like, bro, come on. It doesn't mean that I'm going to vote or support a Republican. It just means that I'm not going to be, I don't want my picture and my face affiliated with certain things because I really do feel like the Democratic Party needs to step it up. And I do think we are in a time where we're past the two-party system. But then you know where I come from. So my philosophy on that is a little different than most, as is yours, because you're quite aware of that, right? And these things are playing into each other because when was that? Was it last week, the bill that went up to the Connecticut legislator about legislation shut story about the street protesting, and nobody was talking about it. See? And these people are testifying to, you know, because this is not just a state level bill. I actually did some research on a, you know, national level, right? The feds and the CIA, they're pushing to stop, to silence people. They're saying, you know, they're using the claim that it's getting violent, but what people are not calling them out on, which protests are getting violent. Because you and I have been to our share of events, and usually, typically the ones where I've seen the violence is when the counter protesters come through. What's your thoughts on that?
No, you answered it. It's true. It's true, but I just want to backtrack a little bit. I just saw something. I didn't get to read it, but the lady that's head of the Secretary of Voting, what's her name? I forgot her name. She's talking about fooling around with the independents and the unaffiliated. So I'm about to pause. I got to read it, but I just have to glance a little bit through it.
So, well, no, you see, they're grasping at anything. Yep, go ahead, sorry.
Yes, they are. No, you're right. They are. That's what they're doing. See, in some states, what I like is, say you lose, you can't jump on the independent line. That's it for you. It's over.
No. It's the crossing over. See, in this state, as small as it is, what people fail to realize, there are actually sufficient people here to run for these spaces. People act like we only have 150 people living here. And then you see, like, in New Haven and in Connecticut as a whole, because you see the same people running for things, and then they move from one role to the other. It's not helpful. It's stifling. Let me ask you a question. As someone who goes,
the voters of the early voting is for the primary, but still, you know, I got a problem with that early voting. I really do.
So do I. So do I.
They should be more worried about the absentee ballots.
Yes. They should be worried about that, and they should be worried about the people who don't have access, right? Like, I don't see the effort being made to increase voting access. I see ways to secure it and gatekeep it, right? Because in 2024, when you look around and you see where the options people have to go vote, show me how many of them are really, you know, disability friendly. How many of them are bilingual friendly? And the answer is not many, is it? And most of these voting stations are in spaces and places that, you know, most people don't feel comfortable going to vote. Let's be real, right? So what do you think should happen differently? Because in my opinion, this four-term thing, if you're going to do four terms, it cannot be consecutive. You could do two consecutive and you have to step out. And I actually think that should be across the board, because in my opinion, that's a big reason why we're not seeing change. We're not allowing the change to happen. We're setting a standard that doesn't exist. You're telling people, yeah, participate in democracy, vote for this one, do this, do that. But where is the opportunity to do that? Right?
I was reading something the other day. A lot of countries now are going to use the computer instead of you coming out, because you're going to encrypt a lot.
Right.
And everybody has a phone.
QR codes. Right.
They're talking about doing that.
Well, this is because again, it's because of the access, because some folks don't have, I mean, let's be real here. People are barely holding on to their housing right now. Barely. Right? We are in a time where folks are fighting to keep their housing. A lot of jobs, they're overloading employees. Like, this is another thing I want us to at least spend like a few minutes on here, because they all connect. You know that, I know that. There's a reason why these jobs are doing it. Our job market is not reliable right now, right? And I don't see sufficient lawmakers who are stepping forward in our favor. Like, look at what's been happening to our legislation, right? How is it possible that we have been fighting for housing security bills for 2 years, three-fifths? How is that possible? It's been 2 years. Why is it taking Connecticut so long to pass bills, in your opinion, that actually assist people? Because we're not seeing that, are we?
Well, some
seeing that. Are you?
Some people get that envelope. Some, you know, there's some that are in the pockets of the landlords and stuff. But, you know, the politics of America itself is they don't fight for the important thing. Housing right now, like you said, is very important. I mean, you know what? I was looking at something, too, where, like, right now, this is March. It's going to get warm. So what we're going to do, we don't have to worry about the warming centers no more. We're going to start the
Yes, they did. And you see what's going on right here in New Haven with the abandoned buildings, right? Remember? Because that's another thing people need to pay attention to. It's like, oh, we care about these abandoned houses for like 5 hot minutes. And then it's a thing, right? But then nobody cares after that. Because I could walk around New Haven and point out houses that are just sitting there, right? They're just sitting there, property, all these different things. These are places and spaces that could have been rebuilt, couldn't they? To help house some of these people, right? Because I think the misperception with the housing is that we actually solve something. Did we even address it, do you feel? I don't think so. You there? Or did he cut off? Hello? Sorry, guys, this rainy day internet is a hell of a thing. But what I'm saying is that I feel like in terms of the housing dynamic right now, there's a lot of talk about housing security. There's a lot of talk about what we need. But I don't see our lawmakers stepping in, not enough of them, to really push things forward, right? We still have people living in cars. We still have people living, and these are professional people, mind you. These aren't people who are not out here in the workforce. There are a lot of working people who are housing insecure, and it does not seem like people care. And I don't understand it. Like, how do we expect anything to change when you ignore a problem like that? That's what I'm trying to understand. I don't know what your thoughts are in that, three-fifths, but that's where I am with it, because I feel like there's some games being played. And in the meantime, you know, our workforce is suffering, and they both go hand in hand. What's your thoughts on that? All right, so it looks like he dipped out to, you know, log in and log out. So in the meantime, let me just unpack what I'm saying here. The truth of the matter is that there's a lot of working people right now, just not in Connecticut alone, but across the United States, who are housing insecure. I mean, these are people who are showing up to work. They are doing their jobs. They are trying to survive. We're not talking about people who, as they very discriminatorily say, live off the system. What I was saying through first before we got our little internet bugaboo there is that, you know, the housing insecurity is particularly bad upon the working people, and that there's a lot of working people who do not have housing security. Like, we have people who are trying to balance between living in you know, house to house, they're couch surfing, and yet they have to show up to work and act like none of this is happening, right? And I don't see lawmakers making moves to really address the work, the job market, because let's talk about the nonprofit side of things. What do you think would happen if before disbursing a penny, you know, the government said to the big nonprofits, like they did this by size, but they started to say, we need you to report your demo on tenure data. What do you think they'll find?
It'll be a mess.
Exactly. Exactly. You think they'll be able to give them that much money? No, because you see, the truth of the matter is, we say words like diversity and equity and all these wonderful words and inclusivity, but do we mean it? Or are we taking the money, hiring a bunch of black and brown people and saying, oop, I checked the box? That's not what that means. There needs to be accountability. The word is accountability. None of these lawmakers, at least not enough of them, in my opinion. And I'm loving, I can't wait to hear yours on this, but I don't feel like they're doing a great job of holding each other accountable. What do you think?
No, they're right. See, what it is, you have two groups. One group believes that, well, government should get involved. The other group believes the government should take, should get involved. That's the split right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. You know? One group says no, the other one says yes.
And I just want to dial back to what you said about the school system. Yes, it is. And I want to go back to the school system because we lost an opportunity there to really improve a broken system, especially here locally, right? We're not thinking about that, okay? A lot of these schools should not be in the condition that they're in. How is it that we're talking about these schools, but we're not talking about the lunch programs? Why do we have children eating what looks like science experiments? I mean, some kids don't even eat at school. That's how bad it is. I mean, really. And then what about the teaching system, right? Do we really have an education system that makes space for Black and brown people to advance? And my answer is no. Right? My answer is no, but we checked the box. We hired a bilingual superintendent in New Haven. So everybody's supposed to be happy with that. See, that's the problem. That's a big part of the problem. Nobody said that we're not happy to see the diversity, but it can't just stop there. Right? Because at the same time, go ahead, keep on.
No, I'm glad you
go ahead, Ed.
Yes.
Yes, go.
I'm glad you brought up the school lunches. I'm glad you brought up the school lunches because I saw a lady on TV about a year or two ago. 47 years she worked in the school lunch services. She said what happens is the problem is not the food because they can't afford that. It's the time that they use to cook it. They don't cook it enough.
Exactly. Like, they don't cook it enough.
So I believe that. I tell people they can't, that food is top-notch stuff. But if you got to like scramble the eggs and you got to say, for example, 150 kids.
And you're rushing to do it.
Minutes,
right.
Right. You just doing 1 minute and throw it in there. That's it. Next one, throw it in. They're not cooking. So what happens?
First of all, what's the point of having a cafeteria if you're going to underutilize it? Let's talk about that. Let's start there.
Right.
What the hell is the point of having a cafeteria system? You have a whole kitchen, but people are looking for work. People are looking for work. You could employ people this way, right? And let's take it a step further. 3/5, let's biggie size the fries. You could actually create a connection with some of the schools, right? This could be a program. You could say, I'll just use a random one. You could say, okay, Hill House, Wilbur Cross, we're going to start this program, the home ec program. You all are going to be doing food. Also include places like Southern, the college. And you keep it in the community, but you're also creating money. You're creating the flow of money. That's what they're not doing. Look at the housing, the Section 8 vouchers that are going out. Who's going to be able to qualify for that? When are we going to do things that actually appeal to the working poor? We're not. We're just making it worse. You see? If you could get the schools to use their kitchen, right? Follow my thought process here. Not that you would disagree, but I need people to understand. If you use those school cafeterias properly, right? Because you see, another part of the story that I found out myself, is that the food gets transported to the school, right? And then at the time of whatever break it is, if it's breakfast, if it's lunch, right? What I'm saying is, instead of trafficking this thing like cocaine, use your cafeteria. Hire people, cook things that are there, right? Because we have kids who have allergies too. What about them? So what, they only eat two out of the five things because you decided to do that? That doesn't make sense to me. But not only that, we could revive the before and after school program that way because now we will have someone there to provide food and snacks. Why is that so hard, 3/5? You know what I'm saying? Why is that so hard? I don't know. This state, it is just all over. I don't get it. I mean, the city of New Haven is running around here acting like they just gave everybody this excellent prize, and they really didn't. Because really and truly, a lot of what they're purporting is highly counterproductive. On one hand, you're making it seem like the school system has been improved, which it has not. We do not have a steady flow of high schoolers going into college, much less having some form of reliable income after graduation. We do not have a solid flow of our school system. It's like we just expect the kids to go to school, go to high school, and whatever miracle happened after that will bless your good country heart. There's no pattern here, right? We do have a situation in our economy where we could create jobs and create an income flow. We have everything staring at us. We have a school system where you could use, you know, nutrition, you could use fresh food. So why not, you know, instead of shipping the food to the school like it's a bag of crack, how about you hire a lunch lady and a staff? So therefore, things could get cooked on site. You could revive the before and after program, right? So people could actually go to work. Let me tell you something. I feel sorry for all the people who have to pay for daycare. It's no joke. Daycare is up there with rent.
Oh, yes, it is. No friend. Oh, wow.
It is up there with rent. And the thing about it is, will some people still need to use daycare? Mm-hmm. Of course. Of course they will. They have no choice. But if you're to revive the before and after school program, right? On the other hand, you put an ease on the pocket, right? That's all it is. And also, you give the kids an opportunity to be in an environment where they could actually learn. You have the children out there freezing in the cold. That used to really bug me out watching my kids wait for the bus. I used to really, that's one thing. I did everything humanly possible that I could do to ensure they didn't have to be on that bus long, that, you know, wait in that spot. Because, you know, I personally don't know what to say. I mean, people fall for the foolishness. All Dustin Elliker has to do is show up on TV and say his kids are at the school and everybody's happy with that. And nobody says anything. And I'm not happy with that. Are you?
Yeah. No. In fact, I saw him in an article. My kids go to school in Fairhaven too.
You see? You see? Listen. No, because you see, they're not eating at lunches. They're privileged. Because you see, here's the thing. We create a division. We're starting to create a division from young. So we're not going to address the food at the school. So what we're going to do, we're going to have kids like Dustin Elliker's kids show up with their nice, fancy, you know, healthy stuff. Yeah. So the other kids feel like crap. Yeah. No. You know what I mean? And this is the same
guy. Right about one thing.
Who went up to
you're right about the cooking of the food.
Yep.
When I went to school, they had a buffet thing. Yeah. But the lady standing behind the line.
This is what I'm saying. Cooking.
So they didn't have to think. As a matter of fact.
That's it.
But you know what? When they design these newer schools now, they didn't put kitchens in them. Some in New York, some of the schools have kitchens in them. They never took them out.
Yeah, but you could still.
But that's what happened.
But wait a minute. I have your solution. Let me tell you something. If the school doesn't have a kitchen, buy a friggin' food cart. They have them now.
Yeah.
Just like you have food vendors, you could buy a couple of those and have the people wheel them in and cook right there. You could do it. Is if they want to do it, that's the problem, right? And you see, again, as I started saying, this is the same mayor, like other mayors, who are doing things like this. And then they go in and they're saying the street protesting has to stop. And people need to pay attention to that. Because that is all the way up to the CIA and the feds. Now, let me give you all some stuff to go research. If you think we're making this up, go research it. They're saying, due to the insurrection, these violent street actions. Now, see, they're saying that, but they're not targeting those people. Are they?
Mm-hmm. No. No.
You see what I mean? They're not targeting them. They're targeting the youths and the memes who's standing up for silliness, dumb stuff like housing and jobs and those things. What's your thoughts on that, Three-Fifths?
No, I call it, they just want to lock us down. Stop our free speech. That's the bottom line. You know, they just want to lock us down. And that's directed at us, because guess what? Who does the most protests in the streets?
Black That's what I'm people. Saying. So it's not helpful when you have Democrats protesting about things like abortions, is it?
Oh, please. Yeah, please.
You have any thoughts on that one? Just asking.
Yeah, the pro-life. It's funny.
The pro-lifers. Where were the
pro-life people at? Mm-hmm. Huh? Mm-hmm. You don't see the pro-life mm-hmm. people out there when it's police in the streets. Where were the pro-life people when the goon squad did that? You don't see them.
They're a joke. It's a whole joke. Right? And people need to be privy to that because, you know, they're throwing stuff in front of you and they're making them sound like solutions and they're not. Like you said, like you started off with the early voting. It's a trap because if that person switches on you, right? You want to say some more on that so people get the picture, what you mean by switching? How does that work? Like, do you mean that they could just switch their party affiliation at the last minute? Or is it more than that? Three-fifths. I think your sound went out again. I see your bubble glowing, but I can't hear you. I don't know what's happening with your audio. But basically, essentially,
how about now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
How about now?
I was asking.
No, what it is.
I can hear you now.
The switching, I got you. The thing is, what I mean is mm-hmm. that what if the person gets involved in a scandal or something? I want to pull my vote. Mm-hmm. You know? You can't mm-hmm. do that with early voting. Once it's there, it's there.
Mm-mm. But what it's about there. Party affiliation? Because look at what just happened in New Haven, right? Tom Goldenberg was mm-hmm. like Democrat for like 5 minutes, and then he decided to be a Republican. Mm-hmm. So if I put in and he did that mm-hmm. within a month, didn't he? It was like within weeks.
He did it after the primary, I think. He did it after the primary.
My point that I'm making is if this had happened during the early voting period, my question is, wouldn't it be then if I voted for him as a Democrat, mm-hmm. I can't switch my vote, can I?
No. The vote went through.
This is what I mean.
Yeah.
So who's to say that there wouldn't be other people to do that? Right? And like you're also saying with the pro-lifers, where are they with things like housing? Mm-hmm. I don't see the pro-lifers coming out to march for housing.
No.
Or jobs.
No.
Do you?
No. And that's part of life. That's part of life. Decent housing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Schools, education. Where are they with education?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How come we don't mm-hmm. see them marching and taking it all down for education? Oh. I mean, I'm telling you, these Christian nationalists, people need to know the difference.
Yes, they are.
They are dangerous.
Yeah, the Christian nationalists are nothing more but the Templar Knights. That's what they are, the Templar Knights.
I'm about to get you going. You ready?
Uh-huh.
You sure?
Oh, yeah. Bring it. Yes.
Now, we said all of that to lead into this, right? People need to realize what religion has done to humanity. One of the biggest weapons used in war is religion. Okay?
Yes.
Now, let's go back in time, people. Bear with us if you shall. Take the journey in history. Here's the thing. Before the Europeans started to enslave our people, who do you think they were fighting with? They were fighting with each other.
That's right.
They didn't like each other, right? They were killing each other. And they did it on the basis of religious beliefs, did they not? Because we had this section of the Catholics thinking this, and we had that section of the Catholics thinking that. We had the Italians right in Italy, the Southern Italians and the Northern Italians. They were not friends.
No.
Right? Everybody hated the Germans. And the Germans hated everybody. But you see, they didn't talk about referring to themselves as white people back then, did they?
No.
They said, okay, if Ireland went to war with, let's just say, Italy, mm-hmm. they'll say the Irish went to war with the Italians.
Right.
But you see, the minute that they started to enslave us, the term white became a thing. And it was really to put that line in the sand. That was the separation of power right there. Now, yes, notice, when they were fighting with each other, as much as they were killing each other and slapping each other around, They still gave each other support. They still taught each other how to do things. Mm-hmm. They shared information, right? They said, oh, look, I know how to do this. You know, they invented things together. But the minute they began to enslave our people, what did they really give us to help us even develop professionally? Nothing. Nothing. They beat us. They killed us. Mm-hmm. They humiliated us. They raped mm-hmm. us. They tortured us. They penalized mm-hmm. us. And hence the reason why people need to understand, right? What's going on in this job market right now is no different than slavery. We have yeah. employers who are overloading their employees, right? You're expecting people to come to work mm-hmm. and, you know, work like a mule as if they don't have life going on. We don't even talk to our staff anymore. We bark out orders. And then when they're presenting, we nitpick at them. I am so annoyed. Did you see that in Louisiana? Unfortunately, Lincoln University has agreed to keep the president the one responsible for leading Dr. Candia Bailey to her suicide. And people need to pay attention to that. Right? Because they talk about mental wellness and they have all these HR things and they say things like, oh, we care about you and we care about your mental health. But then look at what just happened to her. Look at what just happened to her. Let's face the facts. When you are black or brown, unless you faked your way up, especially if you work your way up, they pay you more. They feel they could gaslight you more. We don't get understanding. We don't get that. We get gaslit, right? Meanwhile, we glorify the white toxicity. Look at what just happened right here in West Haven with Mubarak Solomon's case. That officer was never in fear of losing his job. He knew he wasn't going to lose his job. He knew that.
He was in good old Milford.
He was in good old Milford, but let's, you know, the parallel I'm trying to draw here. From the advent of time, the way that black and brown people integrated with the white, since then, this is how we're treated. Okay, and people need to understand that. And we are in a time right now, no different than back then. They do not want to see themselves lose their money. We have so many millionaires in this state alone, and you telling me not one of them could have put out a few, you know, stacks for some housing and relief? Come on, man. What are we doing? Why couldn't they sponsor a school? Pick a few high schools, pick a few, you know, middle schools and you know, have it completely restructured. Why aren't we seeing them doing things like that? Right? But yet you're seeing them showing up in Hartford talking about no street protesting and everything in Connecticut gets studied. We like to study everything. You know, we study everything. And allegedly, there's a new piece of legislation with the red lights. Did you see that one? Because, you know, it's so dangerous in New Haven. Your good friend, Dustin Elliker, decided that he's going to have this new camera system, right? Yeah. We're not going to talk about the fact that there was already a camera system. We're not going to talk about the fact that there was already a camera system, but what we're going to do is we're going to get a new one, and it's to alleviate all the speeding. Now, I think you mentioned something. What about the jaywalkers? Ooh.
That's what I said. Jaywalkers, cyclists. You want to go after everybody? People get mad at me, but it's true.
I wonder who you could be referring to, because I know there's certain parts of New Haven, right? You know, people feel they could cycle just when they feel like it. They could walk on the street when they feel like it. Like, what are you going to do about that? But it's a way to spend money, but it's also a way to build a wealth gap, because who you think is going to get targeted for the ticketing? Who you think is going to get? Because I've seen, of course, I've seen some police officers cross the lights. Are you going to reprimand them too? And they weren't going to an emergency. Their emergency light wasn't on. So does this new rule apply to them too? Or is it just going to be for me and you, three-fifths? I'm just asking.
And speaking of the cameras, these cameras they want, you know, I'm going to text you mine. I got a photo ticket. I'm looking at it now in the Bronx on 19th of March. $50.
Oh.
They said, yeah, you're gonna laugh. I'm gonna take a picture and post it on Facebook. This is what's coming to New Haven. I'm gonna cover my plate up.
You're a celebrity now.
I'm gonna take a picture. Yeah, $50. My wife's Jeep. I got Kia. I had to, you know. Ooh. And they said I was in a school zone. I didn't think about a school zone. So anyway, that's what's coming. What? So get ready. This is what's going on. I'll post on Facebook. This is what this is going to look like.
Let's find
out.
Well, I hope everybody get ready for it, because really, it's the border. Let's think about it. The border behavior, right? Yeah. Like, we have borders now in almost every city, and they call it red light cameras. I would dare say there was different ways to handle that. Don't you? I think that there's a couple of things here, because even when they put those cameras in the city, here's where I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You put those in the city streets, but what about the highways? Because I don't know about everybody else, but I'm not a big fan lately of driving on the highway. Mm-hmm. A lot of very aggressive driving. I mean, this is something we've been talking about a lot, you know, on our show at least, right? You can't even take, you know, back in the day, Ed, you could take your family and take a nice little drive and you say, all right, we're going to get on the highway and go up to Milford. You can't even do that anymore because the speeding not just happening in one lane anymore.
Yeah.
It's every lane. Last time I took the highway, I was like, good God, like I couldn't even, you know, get a chance to go move over. Not that I had far to go, but it's just annoying. A friend of mine said, you know, unfortunately, she has to drive up to Norwalk once a week, and she does not look forward to it at all, you know, because the driving is out of control. It really is out of control. People are just speeding, right? You have the people who speed in, you have the people who are not paying attention, you have the tailgaters. So, okay, so you put up the cameras within the city. What about the highways now? So the highways don't matter? So don't speed in the city, but go speed on the highway. Somebody help me. I'm asking. I just want to know. Because it seems like it's okay. And the sad part is I've actually been on the highway and seen, you know, like, I don't know, officers, state police and stuff, and they're speeding too. So how are we going to address this that's happening on the 95 and the Merritt? Because it's getting out of control, you know? I see a bubble, Ed. I don't see, if you're talking, I can't hear you yet. But, you know, in general, guys, we need to think about that, because they're looking to put up all these different things everywhere, right? I mean, this thing here with mm-hmm. the cameras in the city, I don't get it. Like, you're going to put cameras within the city.
It's a new revenue. And what happened also, they don't tell you, is that there's a lot of rear-end accidents because people stop, so they want to get the ticket, you know?
Well,
and as I wrote in that article, I said, well, how do I go to court and question the camera? I have a right to question the officer, but I can't question the camera. You know, so.
Right. It's what about the highways, Ed? Yeah. What about the highways?
Yeah.
That's my thing. Like, because that's what people do. When they see stuff like this, they'll try to use the highways more. Look at how people drive on the 84. For folks who have taken 84, it's scary. It's really scary. And you would think after that legislator died, Q died, you would think that people would say this would be a high priority item. And it isn't. Because I even see state patrol and regular police speeding. Mm-hmm. They do it too.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do about it? You know what I mean? And where are the, like you say, where are the pro-lifers, your friends? Where are your friends, the pro-lifers? Why aren't they, you know, why aren't they chanting this down? I'm trying to understand it.
They pick and choose.
You know? Well, that's the thing. They pick and choose. Like right now they're playing games with the housing stuff. I hate to tell people, or I should say remind them, they're not going to do much with this housing reform. You know, they don't want to. They do not want to. Okay? They do not want to. Right? They are quite happy with what's happening. We have, as you pointed out, we have people who are in other people's pockets, right? Let's be real here. We have some legislators who are not only slumlords, but they are friends with slumlords, right? So of course they have to be not only silent about tenant abuse, but they got to be silent about Gaza too. It's a twofold thing, if you know what I'm saying, right? And it's a problem. It's a big time problem because it's getting out of control. Tenants have no rights. What rights do we have? What rights do tenants have, three-fifths?
Really? Well, you know, they have to fight for them. They got to fight for them. And I think, you know what's happening to housing? The landlord wants to get them out. It's a thing. Put them out and I can jack the rent up and force it more. That's the
bottom line. Of course. That's the bottom line. It's gentrification. That's the word is gentrification. Yeah. Right? They know. Because you see, here's the thing. You're blaming the working poor for the problem you created. You told these people they didn't have to pay rent, so they didn't pay the rent. But you never said, let me provide some type of something so people could get a financial relief. It would have been a different story if they had aligned the non-payment with some type of payment program. And actually, it should not have just been the landlords to not collect money. They should not be allowing places like UI and Southern Connect, the utility companies in general, should not be allowed. There was no transition from COVID back to economy. They expect people to be able to pay these things. Some people have, you know, cashed out on their pensions, three-fifths, just so they could pay their rent. It's bad. It's really, really bad.
The housing courts are full because they're still doing COVID cases.
Yes. This is what I'm saying.
Still doing COVID cases.
And, meanwhile, what people don't realize is the amount of illegal evictions is increasing. We had a couple that we got called in on ourselves as Black and Brown, right? And it's pretty dangerous. These people are doing some real gnarly things, you know? In one case, the recent one, like I told you guys when I started this episode, we've been busy, trust and believe. We've been busy between the legislative session and trying to, you know, provide support where we can, right? And these are working people that are losing their housing. So imagine dealing with a toxic landlord, right? You're dealing with a toxic landlord, and then you go to work and you're dealing with a toxic work environment. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. Seriously?
Yeah.
And in the case that we had, right, this person was paying their rent. The landlord wanted them out and attempted and was successful in illegally evicting them. And even though they had filed complaints with the police against this landlord, the police favored the landlord, even though the landlord was at fault. Because what happens is, and people need to understand, when the tenant calls the police out here in Connecticut, the police show up and they say things like, well, we can't get involved because if we get involved, we'll have to charge you. But why do you have to charge me, though? I didn't do anything. If I'm telling you that my landlord is saying very racist, you know, homophobic things, that's harassment. I'm allowed to file a complaint for that. But what they don't tell you is when the police show up is that they don't talk it and they make it sound like it's not their job, that they could only do so much and that they could only get involved if it gets violent. What the hell are people supposed to do with that? You tell me. But in Connecticut, we're studious. So instead of addressing stuff like that, we're going to study everything. I cannot wait to see the findings of all these damn studies. I'm tired of it. I don't know about everybody else. And it's not only Connecticut either. It's other states too. The fact that this woman died and these people are going to just move on in life, meaning Dr. Candia Bailey, and people could seem less bothered. It's scary. It's really, really scary. Humanity needs to learn to love itself again. We don't talk to each other nice. We don't treat each other nice. You know, we judge each other. We don't even know how to apologize and do right by each other anymore. It is really, really sad. We're always stressed out. I mean, think about it. You're stressing about getting your daycare. You're stressing about getting to work on time. When do you have an opportunity to appreciate just being around people? Never. Never. The hostility is on an all-time high, right? And the minute you say something, you are now, you know, treated as if you should not have said anything at all. So it's like slavery, you know, shut up, slave. Don't complain, slave. At least you have a job, slave. At least you have a house, slave. Like, it's happening in different ways and spaces. And now, you know, with moves like this, with the traffic lights, this is just the beginning of more to come, right? Where has the city and state stepped in on the job security? You keep offering people the same damn jobs, right? Why would I want to go to school and finish my college degree if the only thing you could see me doing is working in a damn kitchen? Come on now. Mm-hmm. Let's get real. Yeah. Let's get real.
Well, you know, we spoke of the doctor that died. What it is, she died from the presence of institutional racism. And
of course,
you know, she just, it's strong. And she probably had nobody to talk to. Let me tell you something. I had a cousin of mine. She worked around the white folk, but she was kind of in charge. But my cousin kept her sanity by talking to the janitor, by talking to the so-called lower people and the house cleaners. Let me tell you what happened. One day, she left the meeting, and the girl went to go empty out the garbage, the cleanup woman. She found a picture, a derogatory mark of my cousin on there. She gave it to her. She was like, think about you in there. Yeah, it was in the garbage can. They balled it up, made jokes. You know?
Mm-mm.
That's what they do. Mm-mm. They talk behind their back.
That's exactly what... Yes.
She had nobody to turn to. She had nobody to turn to. You know, sometime. And it'll do it. You know? But I tell people all the time, upper echelon, talk to that maintenance person. Don't be afraid to talk to them. You know?
No.
You'd be surprised what people do for you. Don't turn your back.
Well, you can't. You see, that's why I said, if you fake your way up, the people who fake, the people who code switch, right? Let's talk about the code switchers. Yeah. Because the problem is the code switchers get the respect. The code switchers are the white Negroes and white Latinos and those who forget that they don't check off that box. And what they do is on the job, they get very good at doing very little, barking out orders and gaslighting people, right? They pretend to care, but they hold a role where they make sure that they don't take on too much accountability. They're the biggest critic in the room. And as a friend of mine recently experienced, people like that don't always, you know, exist in one space, shall we say. So we have the Karens, and then we have, you know, the white Negroes and Latinos who throw you under the bus. In this situation, my friend was fortunate to be in a space where her supervisor is supportive. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is the Karen involved didn't even let her. Now, this is somebody in leadership. All she was doing was trying to present a project she was working on. And this is another trait of white supremacy, whether people want to hear this, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Nitpicking and policing somebody is not supervising. That is not supervision. That is not productive. That is exactly what it sounds like. And that's exactly what Karens and code switchers do. So in this case, as my friend is presenting their project, the Karen had to have negative feedback for every friggin' thing. Everything. Nothing was wrong with it. It met all the requirements, you know. And you see, these Karens, they're very good at making little things big things. So, for example, you make a typo, we go and make it sound like the whole world about to end, right? Let me make sure I devastate you so that your anxiety hits you different. And that's basically what happened in this meeting. She had like a couple little something, but that's why you call it a meeting. That's why it's called, you know, a meeting. You meet, you discuss, you help, you support. You don't nitpick. And in the case with Dr. Candia Bailey, that's what was happening to her. She would be in her meetings as documented by others who work there. And as a Black woman in leadership, we do not get an easy way. The standards that are set for us are unrealistic. Let's start there. We always have to take accountability, you know, and the American workforce is very good at being distrustful towards its staff. So off the rip, they don't trust you. You have to prove yourself. Everything you do, you have to provide evidence. You have to validate your thought. If you needed to call out to work because you had a headache, like in the case of Candia Bailey, you have to prove to them why that PTO is valid. But if a white person show up and say, yo, man, I didn't sleep good last night. I might call it a day tomorrow. Oh, sure. Yeah, you worked so hard on that project. You see the difference. So what people need to do, instead of watching stuff like this happen and being silent, right? Be supportive, man. Our workforce is dying. They're killing us. They're overloading us, right? They're burning us out. And they're making us feel like, you know, we have to take it because you need the bag. And what they're not realizing is more and more of us were walking out on the jobs, or sadly, you know, one mm-hmm. of two things, either putting up with it, right, until we find something, or get laid mm-hmm. off, or on the mm-hmm. other hand, doing what she did. That woman killed herself because she got to the point where, you know, people, nobody was listening. I mean, I could definitely relate. She had to defend herself the minute she opened her eyes till she closed them. Imagine being in a room and you're trying to speak and everything you do and say is criticized. That's very stressful. And especially when people make it sound like, you know, or they put their critique in such a framing that it adds to the angst. So what I read in her case, for instance, she was the VP of student affairs, and she would be in there, you know, trying to propose different projects and challenge different things. And they would nitpick her and nitpick her. Nothing was ever good enough. Nothing was ever to the standard. You should have done this. This could have been like that. I mean, how much of that you expect one person to take, man? Let's be real. And then they always hold a carrot over you. They always hold a carrot over you. Right? Because the reality is the job market is very unstable. These companies don't care. They don't care if you have other stuff going on. Nobody cared if she had any type of, you know, physical or mental, anything going on with her. Nobody cared. That's another thing. Disabled Black and brown people, oh, we get the shittiest end of the stick. The shittiest end of the stick, right? God forbid you have a disability. My God. Right. But to be a Black or brown woman in leadership, you could be one or the other. Either you're a code switcher or you're trying to be you in this space. And that's what happened with her. And they killed her. That's how I see that. They killed that woman. Because as a woman in leadership, it happens to me all the time. Right. I've had experiences, one recent. I didn't even say nothing. I was legit in the damn class. You know, I was in a class where it's supposed to be like a leadership class. And, you know, I was paying attention, but I was just in my own zone, right? Minding my own business. Mm-hmm. And there's a discussion going on. Mind you, other people are chiming in. Other people are sharing their thoughts. I'm not saying a word. I'm just listening, actively listening. And the facilitator picks on me. I know CJ has something to say. There's never, like, I can actually give several stories of being judged on the scene. Like, I don't even have to say nothing. And it's annoying. There was one that happened 2 nights ago. I'm in a meeting. We're supposed to be, and we're talking graphics. And everybody, all the white people acting like they have to sell me the idea of this other graphic that was done. And now it creates a tension. So now me and the other creator, now there's this invisible tension, because somehow, some way, I gave the impression that I'm the one, I'm the go-to with graphics. I never did that. I never even said that. I don't care. You want to do it, do it. But this is what I mean. The Americans, and when I say that, I say with the 3 Ks, you see in the title of the episode, because that's what they're acting like, and people need to face it. Mm-hmm. Just because someone says they're a Democrat mm-hmm. does not mean they cannot be racist, sexist, and transphobic. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. Let's be real. You know, the passive aggressive email crap that they like to do. That's another thing. The passive aggressive communication, period. Because I've sat in on meetings about events, right? We're talking about like things that are supposed to be geared towards building public interest, things about housing, things about Gaza, things mm-hmm. about, you know, all what we're talking about. And even in those spaces, the white people do the same damn thing. They will pick at you, and they are the subject matter experts. And it's annoying. What happened to Dr. Bailey? It happens. It's happening. Mm-hmm. It's happening. I've had calls from people who are that close to saying, today's my last day on this planet. I'm so serious. Because they're stressed out. They're stressed out. The stress is real. Mm-hmm. So we need our lawmakers to actually do what they say. Because when you ran for office, you did your nice mm-hmm. flyers, and you had, you know, all your pamphlets mm-hmm. and the pictures, and your teeth was looking nice, and your hair was done, and you know, your outfit was good, and you make sure you film it a certain way with certain people. So just like you painted that picture, you need to act like the person in that picture is what we're saying. You understand? We need you.
You're right. The lawmakers need to pass the strength of the laws of a hostile work environment. They need to strengthen those laws. Yes. Hostile work environment.
They need to strengthen all laws. All laws, all of them, mm-hmm. all of them.
All of
because
them,
yeah. the workplace is not geared to the black or brown employee, especially those in leadership. It's not. Because when they pay you more, they expect they could gaslight you.
Mm-hmm.
That is an American, that's an American as America could get. Yeah. Accountable. So why would I care? Mm-hmm. Of course I could illegally evict who I want. Of course I could raise that rent a month before, because that's another thing. We didn't even get to touch on that up tonight. And this is something we're going to talk about. We got to put a whole episode, three-fifths, just to talk about this housing, mm-hmm. because these landlords are getting nastier, yeah. right? You're talking oh, yeah. about raising yeah. the rent, right? 2 months or a month before somebody's supposed to, their lease ends. That's not fair. You're supposed to tell somebody, it should be a law that if you expect to raise, you know, you anticipate raising that rent, mm-hmm. it can't even be 6 months. It needs to be a year. Be fair, because people need to find their housing.
And I found out some more stuff too. I've been hearing that, like, say LCI condemns that building.
Mm-hmm.
What are the people that can't afford a hotel? Now they got to look for another place. The building's condemned.
Right. Right.
They don't have money to move at that point. They don't have no money to move. It's the government has to step into housing.
Yes, because I could go on for days with the hotel stuff, because I've lived the experience with that. And people need to understand something. That hotel, that's not a solution. Let's be real here, people. It's called a hotel. That means that other people are there too. Some of the folks, and I stress this, you need to, you know, close your eyes, open them, and see who are the ones facing these disparities. There are working people with families, children, okay, families that are facing all that we're talking about. There are single mm-hmm. people, young people who are trying to. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about these things because it's getting ridiculous.
And don't forget about our sisters who are single and the landlord is knocking on the door at 1 o'clock in the morning looking for that favor. Hmm. That's on the rise.
Start. We need,
you know,
even starting that whole the thing that's happening. That's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. Attention, because if you think it is that far-fetched have a moment of silence, friends, in Gaza, in Congo, and Haiti.
Hello? She go out. Oh, wow, what happened? Thing went out. Oh, disconnected. Let me try this. Get back on. I think we're out. This thing went out. Oh, wow. It's dead. Okay. Call her by phone.
Still can't hear you, sir. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here tonight, Three Fifths. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. You know, your knowledge is impeccable, right? And all who tuned in tonight, thank you so much for your continued support, encouragement. We really, truly appreciate you. We are going to keep on going. Don't worry about that. You know, we are. And we really, truly, truly appreciate your continued support and encouragement. It means very, so much. I can't even say it properly. You see that? Ha ha. But, you know, wherever you are, whoever you're with, you know, just remember, you are amazing. It's really rough out here in America right now. It really, really is. Take a moment. Cry if you need to cry. Scream if you need to scream. Don't keep it inside. Please don't keep it inside, right? And just know that, you know, it may not seem like it right now, but it will be okay, all right? And again, we thank you all. Fist up, smile on, peace. CJ, till next time.